Welcome to the Ask for Football Army Football Show. The Army Football Show is an insider's guide for cadets, old grads, and college football fans to follow the Army team throughout their season as they seek to beat Navy and claim the Commander-in-Chief's trophy. Ask for Football is brought to you by our sponsor, Jocelyn Bradley Real Estate. Whether you're buying, selling, or just exploring your options, Jocelyn Bradley is the expert you can trust to navigate the real estate market with ease. Visit jocelynbradley.com to learn more. And let's get started at the Ask for Football Army Football Show. Army Football Show.
Hi, friends. We've got a great interview for you today. Omar interviewed Lehman Hall, class of 1978, arguably the greatest passing quarterback in Army football history. Hall holds the all-time record for most passing touchdowns in a season and stands second on the all-time passing yards list with 5,502 yards. He led the team to a 7-4 record in his first season back in 1977 and won the Commander-in-Chief's trophy. So this dude still holds the all-time passing touchdowns records, and he played in 1977. You may remember Omar's post-Air Force article comparing Cale Helms' comeback win over the Zoomies last season to Hall's 1974 comeback win. If you don't, I'll drop the link to that one in the comments. That article proved pretty popular with our readers, so Omar followed up with this interview, which we held for the offseason, and here we are. As a reminder, the Ask for Football Army Football Show is brought to you by Jocelyn Bradley Realtor. If you are about to PCS to the Fort Bragg area, have we got a realtor for you? Jocelyn is a veteran who spent her Army career in logistics. There, she discovered her passion for making a difference in people's lives. She is committed to helping her clients find their dream homes when they are in the market, and she provides exceptional service when she's working for you. Jocelyn has decided to support Ask for Football this season. She is the right person to get you into the home of your dreams. And friends, even if you're not moving to the Fort Bragg area, Jocelyn can still set you up with a realtor that you can trust. Buying a house is obviously a nerve-wracking process, so reach out to her and help her find somebody that can help you get into the house or sell the house, sell your house. Telling you, it's easy. Just go to askforfootball.com. She and all of our sponsors have a little business card there. She'll get you set up in a matter of hours. And now, without further ado, here's Omar and Mr. Lehman Hall.
Good evening, afternoon, night, morning, whenever you find or watch or listen to this podcast. Well, I'm not sure if it'll be watched or listened because this is going on as for football. I was able to connect with an Army football legend, you know, by the grace of God and just by the opportunity just to do great things like this, like write for Ask for Football, write historical pieces. And joining me today for just a great interview is an Army football legend. I mean, I told the first thing I said to him when we hopped on in this conversation was, man, this is surreal. I'm joined by Army's second all-time leading passer, Lehman Hall. And I told Mr. Hall that when I was in middle school, I would print articles of Army football in the school library. And then one of the first ones I came across was his Sports Illustrated feature that I've referenced a couple times in a couple of historical pieces on Ask for Football, A Star on the Backside of Heaven. Found that one in the SI vault, printed it out, and put it in a binder as a kid in middle school. Now here we are, you know, almost 15 years later. I'm interviewing the great Lehman Hall. So Mr. Hall, thank you for joining. And how's everything going?
It's going great. Please call me Lehman. My dad's name is Mr. Hall.
Okay, that sounds great, Lehman. But yeah, just thank you so much for taking in some time. And I guess a little background for the audience just on how this came to be. So this will probably be released like in the off season. I don't know, January, February, March. Just know it'll be in the off season by the time this is released. In November, Army, of course, beat Air Force in that dramatic 20-17 win out there in Colorado Springs, and Cale Helms led a last-minute drive. And so naturally, me, you know, just knowing a lot about Army football, I thought, like, you know, there is a game in the past that was almost like this one that we just saw, and it was a 74 game. And so I was thinking, so I wrote the article for Ask for Football, and then after I was thinking, you know what, like, it would be nice if we're able to track down either Michael Marquez, who unfortunately I found out passed away recently, or Lehman Hall, the quarterback who led that drive, which we'll talk about later on in this interview. And so I found an interview that Lehman did with Georgia Southern. So, you know, God is good with that. And here we are today. I was able to get Lehman Hall's contact information. promptly from the Georgia Southern football, I think, communications group, the people that made the podcast, and was able to send a message. And, you know, here we are. The internet and everything is great.
Yeah, awesome. It's really great to be here, and I'm honored to be your guest.
Well, I mean, the honor is mine, obviously, as I've said, you know, during this interview, and I guess you can see it on my face. But yeah, so I guess the first question I have for you, Lehman, is, I mean, that's a question that everyone asks you, whether you played football at the academy or not, is like, what brought you to West Point?
Well, like we were talking earlier, when I watched the Army-Navy games growing up and in high school, I actually rooted for Navy because my dad was in the Navy during the Korean War. So I think that sheds light on how everybody in the country identifies with some, you know, one of the teams for one reason or another. Their uncle was in the Army or brother-in-law or, you know, whatever. So everybody picks a side for some reason, which makes the whole Army-Navy-Air Force rivalry such a big thing. But, you know, when I was in high school, I also thought it was just a bunch of Army guys who played a bunch of Navy guys once a year. I didn't really understand the full impact and the importance of everything behind Army football, i.e. the academy. So, you know, I had a colonel visit my school and asked me if I was interested in playing for Army. And I said, yeah, I'm interested in playing, you know, for anybody where I can, you know, have an opportunity to continue my desire to play football. And, you know, and at the time I was having a kind of a tough time in the recruiting cycle because I had gotten injured my senior year. So a lot of the teams that were, you know, talking with me were not talking as much anymore. So I just kind of kept those fires burning. Went up to West Point for a recruiting visit. And that's when, you know, the whole impact of West Point hit me. I found out it was a whole lot more than just a bunch of Army guys playing a bunch of Navy guys. And I was just totally awestruck by the history, not only of football, but, you know, all of West Point. And I was indoctrinated, you know, that entire weekend. And I came back, you know, with a whole new, outlook on, playing football and having the opportunity of playing. At the time, it was just, there wasn't a Division I, but, you know, playing at that level, potentially playing on TV and being part of the Long Gray Line. That was just awesome, awesome experience.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's something that it's great that you mentioned the history of the academy itself, because I remember just on a lot of, you know, just long nights, I mean, towards graduation, just coming back from library, just coming back from wherever, whether it be club night on Tuesday, and just thinking about the next day, just thinking, man, you know, like in the moment this stinks, but it's just cool to be a part of the Long Gray Line in the midst of all these historic buildings. I mean, it seems weird and simple, but I mean, the history of the academy itself is just something that's just like, it's really hard to, I guess, put into words, honestly, especially like being part of the history department as I was, you know, for my degree.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, walking around the same buildings that, you know, that MacArthur and Eisenhower and, you know, all the great generals. And, you know, we had a couple of astronauts at that time. It's just unbelievable to be walking in those shadows. And I would say you know, there are certainly many times when you're not feeling real, excited about being at West Point. But there was never a day that I didn't appreciate where I was.
Yeah, exactly. That's the same way that I felt, you know. It was tough, but I was always grateful. Honestly, I was grateful. Wouldn't trade it for anything else. So going to like my next question about your first year at the academy. So, you know, after reading your like the article, the Sports Illustrated featurette, Star on the Backside of Heaven, which we'll reference a few times during this interview. You played your first year in 1974 under a wishbone scheme. And of course, that wasn't a scheme that was tailored to your skill set as a great passer that you were. So what was that first year in the wishbone scheme like for you?
Well, it was disconcerting. Although, you know, I'm such an optimistic, positive person. I said, listen, I'm here. I can mold myself into this. I will myself into being a wishbone quarterback. But just to give you a little bit of a backdrop, the coach had been fired the year before with probably one of the worst records that Army had ever had. I think it was an 0-10, getting beat 77-0 by Nebraska on national TV. During that year, I was actually at the Army prep school. So I had been recruited by the, you know, the previous coaching staff, and they were in a pro offense, you know, so my skills would have matched extremely well had that staff stayed in place. Well, Homer Smith came in my freshman year, and you know, and I, as an aside, I have to also say that I ended up marrying Homer's daughter. So, you know, I've been happily married to her for 46 years, but little did I know at the time, you know, that he would become my father-in-law. But when Homer came on campus, you know, the first thing he did was try to evaluate the talent that he had, and you know, where were the best players, the best athletes, and how would it fit into some scheme? And he quickly found out, because the heir apparent quarterback had flunked out of school the year before, that there was really nobody on campus who could stand 15 yards apart from each other and play catch. So he decided to get a couple of the best athletes on the team and make quarterbacks out of them. And he had come from UCLA, where he had made the wishbone very famous out at UCLA. He was well renowned for that kind of offense. And so he put the offense in during the spring while I was still at the prep school. And, you know, of course, when I showed up on campus for Beast Barracks, you know, they already had the wishbone in and had a couple of quarterbacks lined up to run it. So I was way on the outside at that point in time, but I worked really hard to, you know, to put my best foot forward, so to speak, and to show what I could do. But I think the biggest breaks came for me when, you know, we had some pretty good success with the wishbone. We played some pretty tough teams and did fairly well, but we got into situations during the game where we literally could not complete a 25-yard pass. So Homer decided that he wanted to do something to kind of bridge the gap with that. So he created this specialty team of just passing. And I was the passer for that team. So it was a bunch of JV players who, you know, weren't even on the roster, and we would practice separately on a separate field. A lot of the players kind of laughed at us, thought it was a little bit of a joke, you know, so on and so forth. And I know I may be getting ahead of a couple of your questions, but I had a specialty coach, Mike Michelianis, who, you know, passed a few years after I graduated. But Mike worked with me day in and day out, teaching me timing and steps and fundamentals. And he just drilled me constantly, even to the point of irritation. But we drilled every day with a few specialty receivers. We only ran a few plays that we mastered, that we literally could probably doing our sleep on the steps, and it was all based on timing and week in and week out, Homer kept saying, you know, get ready to go. You know, it could happen any day. And that happened for like two games where I would warm up on the sideline and never get a chance to come in. And finally, it was the Vanderbilt game when we were getting beat pretty convincingly going into the fourth quarter that he called on, as we got our name to be known, he called on the bomb squad. And we went out onto the field. This was the Vanderbilt game prior to the Air Force game that you alluded to earlier. And during that game, I just remember us all going out on the field, and I was the only person who went into the game who was on the roster and actually had a varsity jersey on. The rest of the guys were JV players who had JV uniforms that were just a little bit different than the varsity uniform. This was back, you know, when there wasn't so, you know, Nike didn't have all that money into athletic. So, you know, the announcer's trying to figure out who all these guys were coming into the game. They weren't on the roster. But anyway, that was kind of funny. And I just remember stepping away from the huddle because this had been a dream of mine, you know, to play in a Division I game and then later a dream to be the Army quarterback. And I just soaked it all in. Almost got a delay game penalty because I was just really looking around. I was checking out the stands. I just really wanted to feel that moment. And I knew how important that moment was for me. And from there, then on out, you know, we had like 12 completions in a row. It was like taking candy from a baby with Vanderbilt. We just marched right down the field. We didn't have any running plays, however. So if we got down to the 10-yard line, they would bring the wishbone team back in to punch the ball in the end zone. But we ended up scoring two touchdowns in the fourth quarter to kind of make the game respectable. And I threw for a whole bunch of yards during that game. So that was kind of my my introduction. And then the Air Force game was going to be the following week.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a perfect segue to my next question, which I had, can you take me through that final Air Force drive, that comeback victory, that last drive? What was it like? Like, were you nervous, or were you guys like really prepared for the moment? It sounds like you guys were really prepared for the moment.
And I haven't really thought about that question in the past, but no, I wasn't nervous. But I will tell you this, that I was probably not very tuned in to how important the Air Force Army game was. I mean, to me at that point in time in my career, it was just another game, you know, and we've been saying beat Navy all year, not beat Air Force. So Air Force was just really another game. And I knew I was going to have possibly have a chance to play because the following week, we just lit up the stadium, you know, and the cadets just went wild seeing, you know, the ball being thrown around like we threw it around that day. But, you know, the Air Force game was a real, really tough game. And, you know, you mentioned Mike Marquez and, you know, I knew he had passed away and, you know, it's just really sad, but, Mike was the JV kicker. And I also played on the JV team on Friday nights or Thursday nights whenever we would play. And then I would dress out on Saturday and I would be, you know, somewhat beat up because I would play most of the JV game. Mike was on the JV team. He had done really well the week before the Air Force game in the JV game. And Homer made it a practice to dress out two players from the JV team. You know, not including myself, cause I was already on the varsity, but I'm talking about people who weren't on the varsity squad. And he was one of those two that got selected to dress out for the Army Air Force game. Well, our starting kicker, who was a classmate of mine, Mike Castelli, got injured right before halftime. He kicked an extra point or something and somebody fell onto his leg and hurt his leg real bad. He was in the hospital. So that kind of set up this whole thing with Mike and myself. But the whole game, Mike Michelinis, who was kind of like my personal coach, kept telling me, stay ready, stay ready, stay ready. You know, and I warmed up so much, my arm was sore. And I just stayed warm the whole game. And it wasn't until we got down to the fourth quarter, our last drive, that Air Force kicked us deep in our territory, somewhere around the 20, and had one more chance to, you know, to beat them. And I was just over there warming up, and I heard Coach Smith say, bomb squad, bomb squad. And I'm like, oh, my God, they're going to put the bomb squad in when you know, in the last drive of the Air Force game. And so that's how it went, and we just drove right down the field. We got within field goal range, and that's when Mike Marquez got his chance. He was the only kicker on the team at that point in time. Came in, kicked the winning field goal, and I don't think Mike ever kicked in the game again. You know, because Mike Castelli was our kicker. What a great opportunity for him, and you know, and the bomb squad. And from that point on, the bomb squad was pretty important on campus from that time on.
Wow, that seems like the stuff of movies, honestly. I mean, especially with Mike Marquez, which after we released the article, someone had mentioned on Twitter/X now that was the only field goal that he had kicked, and he had passed away a few years back. So it's just great, honestly, like seeing those stories, come to life, and like seeing people connect with the stories like that. And just like that's a friend that kicked that field goal. That's a friend that had that moment in the sun. Really makes what we do at Astro Football, or just in general, just writing and telling stories special, which I mean, it's just great, because I guess we didn't have a bomb squad in 2024 with this Air Force, or sorry, 2025 with this Air Force game. I mean, forgot what year it was, but 2025 with this Air Force game. But I mean, sure enough, I mean, we went down the field, kick the field goal without having a whole second team. But the whole bomb squad thing is just really cool. I'm really intrigued by it.
And of course I'm biased, but it would make for good screenplay.
maybe one day it'll make a screenplay. So going on to my next question, this is just like a generalized question. I'm sure you covered a lot of it so far, but I mean, what was it like playing for Homer Smith, just in general?
Well, you know, Homer, as I mentioned, he was turned out to be my father-in-law, but he was one of the greatest men that I've ever come in contact with. He was extremely brilliant, being a Princeton magna cum laude and getting a Harvard degree, and he was a graduate assistant at Stanford and got his MBA coaching football, being a graduate assistant. But he just had a real knack for innovating, and even after he left Army, you know, he had some of his greatest years after that with Alabama and with UCLA. It was just great that I was able to be in his path and learn from him, learn life lessons from him, as well as football, and having the opportunity of playing for him was just an awesome experience. And I think anybody you go talk to who's played for him, from Rick Neuheisel to, I could come off and name a few, but they all tell the same stories about his brilliance and his character. And he was just, you know, fun to be around.
Yeah, that's amazing to hear, honestly. I mean, and everything I've read, you know, just corroborates, I mean, that, I mean, it's really an all-time great, underrated too. I mean, I don't think many college football fans, you know, really give him the credit that he's due for his contributions to the game. But it's just great to hear, you know, just such a glowing review of him as a person, not just as a football coach.
Yeah, absolutely.
So going on to my next question. So looking at the schedule the Army played in those years, very, very star-studded schedule, like a lot of programs and that a lot of great programs that you guys played in the years that you were there. This is a fun question for me, as my dad is from the Bay Area and, you know, I'm a big Niner. Well, not a, I'm a Niners fan. I'm not a big NFL fan, but when I do watch NFL, I root for the Niners. So what was it like, you know, sharing the field with Joe Montana as other quarterback and Steve Bartkowski of Cal? Like, was that something that you even thought of when you took the field against those guys? Or looking back, was that something that was just like cool just to reflect on?
It's cool to reflect on, but you've got to understand that when you're in the moment, they're just another guy who puts their pants on like you do. And your main goal is to go out and prove yourself and your team deserving of being on the same field, regardless of how great they were. Now, I will say this. I mean, when we played Joe Montana from Notre Dame, he was not the marquee player. He did not become a marquee player until, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, you have to check me on this, but I think when he played Texas in the Cotton Bowl, his junior year, and he threw for like 600 yards or something and helped Notre Dame win the national championship. And that's what catapulted him to stardom from that point on. But yeah, it, you know, looking back on it, you know, it's a great thing to, see all the players that you played against and some of them, you know, end up becoming Hall of Famers and what have you. But you bring up a really good point. And, at the time we were, I mean, to compare it to today's time, we played the, you know, what do they call the Conference of Five or whatever?
Oh, a group of five?
Yeah, group of five. I mean, we played group of five week in and week out. There were very few off games, you know, so, and that was one of the things that really intrigued me about going to Army was if I'm not going to play for, you know, a Florida or an Auburn or, you know, one of the Southern schools that I was really enamored with, I was at least going to get to compete against them.
Yeah, I mean, looking at the schedule, it was like truly a gauntlet that you guys played back in the day. I mean, teams that I wish that we played, you know, more often or even at all nowadays. You know,
be careful about what you wish for, though.
that is true. I mean, I'd say on a more occasional basis because I think I remember when I was a plebe, 2017 Duke came into town, and I mean, that was like that's probably one of my favorite things to look back on. Like I always tell people too, like I mean, I always kind of joke around. I'm like, yeah, like Daniel Jones, that guy's nothing. Like, you know, I was in the stands when we shut him down back in 2017. And then, so I've seen both sides, the good side when we knock those teams off and the bad side. Like in 2023, we were doing a field exercise and I took a break to call my mom and I was like, man, I'm like, did you see the Army score, mom? And she's like, no. I'm like, I think we're back to the bad days, you know, when we got beat 62-0 by LSU. So I've seen both sides of the, you know, the power teams, but looking at the schedule that you guys played, like, and how respectable it was in most cases. Like I didn't even mention the Pitt games where you guys were competitive against Pitt, Tony Dorsett, Matt Kavanaugh, all those guys. You know, what a gauntlet you guys played back in those days.
Yeah. And I think the thing that's most amazing about it, you know, and this really kind of goes back to Homer too, is we were tremendous underdogs and we didn't feel like we were underdogs and we hated being pigeonholed into that. But you know, in reality, we did not have by and far the athletes that any of these teams had. And we were extreme overachievers individually and as a team. And, you know, I think a lot of that came from the coaching leadership. I think a lot of it came from player leadership. You know, my senior year, Chuck D'Amico was the captain of the defense, and I think he and I, you know, really helped instill an attitude of, you know, we can't be beat, and week in and week out, we knew that we had a chance. We knew it, although no one else knew it. And I think that really helped us play above our level. I mean, I honestly believe going into the Navy game, we probably shouldn't have beaten Navy my senior year. They were a better team. I think they probably, man for man, had better athletes than we did that year. But it's not always the best player or the most athletic player. I think it says something for, you know, the little guy and the guy who's, you know, putting other things ahead of just what kind of talent that they have. It's like, what kind of heart do they have?
Yeah, I mean, I think you summed it up perfectly, especially now. I think now with that draw of Army football, now that Army is back and prominent and able to compete regularly, I think even people that have no stake in Army football, you know, they don't have family that served in the Army, they aren't West Point grads, they don't go to West Point or whatever it is. I mean, I think they enjoy seeing Army and Navy and Air Force, for that matter, all compete against, you know, bigger programs. I know this year, of course, we beat Kansas State, or in 2025, this past season, we beat Kansas State. So I know that that's something that even non-Army fans or something, that people were just really thrilled by that too. I mean, just seeing, and I think like you captured it, like the whole underdog, not mentality, but just the ability to play above oneself, to play against teams that, I mean, theoretically you shouldn't beat, you know, that the odds say, that the paper says you shouldn't beat. So I think you captured it perfectly with these, you know, in talking about just these challenging games that you played in the time that you played at West Point.
Yeah. You know, I you being a history major, you can probably go back into history and think about, you know, battles we won and wars that we won that had those in leadership and those who were, you know, on the battlefield had taken the belief of what everyone else thought or that they expected from them, you know, they may very well not have won. And we may not be the country that we are today, because that is the American spirit. And the American spirit is being bigger than oneself, and knowing that, you know, if you get a number of people together who have a common goal and who really believe in that goal and 100% dedicate themselves to that goal, it can be achieved. And one thing, when I played in some of the postseason games and, you know, the little time that I spent with the Cowboys, constantly I would have those players come to me and say, you guys just never knew when to quit. And it used to really piss us off, because we'd be beating the heck out of you and you'd still be coming at us. And you know, and that's just the way we were. Like a bulldog on a bone.
And I think that's, again, that's like what draws people to Army football. Like people that, you know, have just no connection, like Army, you know, Navy and Air Force, like they just have no connection, but they see that spirit, the competitive spirit, and you just can't help but love it. But that's hilarious that they actually told you that.
many times in many different circumstances. And, you know, and I think the country, when like you say, people who aren't necessarily associated with the academies see Army just going after it, you know, against a Goliath opponent and maybe getting beaten, but to see them just keep going after it, you know, right to the final play, I think, you know, really encourages folks out there that, hey, it's just great that there are men like that And I want to be like that myself, you know, and I think it's very encouraging to see that kind of spirit.
Friends, if you've listened to the As for Football Army Football Show before, you already know that we are sponsored by Craig Oxane, area sales manager and mortgage broker at the Money Store. Craig is a member of the West Point class of 1994, licensed to lend in all 50 states, based out of Chicago. He is one of the most successful VA lenders in the country. Friends, Craig is going to offer you super competitive rates, give you the best deal he possibly can. Why does this matter? Because the mortgage process is super confusing. You've got interest rates moving all over the place. It's just not the time to try to deal with some clown who just wants to make a buck off you. Deal with someone who actually cares, who's a real person, who will answer the phone and answer your questions when you give them a call. That's not a call center, not some random big box bank or mindless website. And as we've discussed before, this is how the West Point Network functions. Craig is helping us stay in business here at As for Football, and we're trying to help you get the best deal on a mortgage that we possibly can by introducing you to the very man that you need to meet. Plus, Craig does not charge lending fees for veterans. That's a huge savings. It's like $1,300, guys. Save that money. Save yourself $1,300. So Craig Oxane, area sales manager at the Money Store. Like Jocelyn, Craig's business card is up on our website. Just go to asforfootball.com. He'll get you set up in a couple of hours. Thank you.
I think that's perfectly said, really. I mean, just that Army football, you know, just being a model to just Americans, really. I mean, you know, it's just a great thing to think of. I mean, in a way, it's just more than a game, honestly.
Yes.
So going on to my next question, I guess it's kind of built on the last question about, you know, just playing against like Joe Montana and Steve Bartkowski. But like, aside from the 1977 Navy game in your senior/first year, do you have any favorite games, you know, in your time at the Academy, your favorite games just to like look back upon or just
Stanford? Yeah, it's an easy one. Stanford, my junior year. I didn't personally have a great game. First half was just absolutely terrible for all of us. Statistics weren't very good. But I think this kind of accentuates the point that I brought out just earlier is, if you look at the first half statistics and say, okay, let's just stop right there. We'll call it. That's the game. We would have been down 20-0. I think I would have had, you know, 5 out of 18 or 20 passes completed. And it would just have been a tragedy. Right. But we came out in the second half and, you know, really put it on them. We ended up the game ended up a last second touchdown, and we went for two to beat them instead of one to tie them. And one other thing, back in those days, there were no ties. I mean, there was no overtime. So if you ended up in a tie, it was a tie, and we decided to go for two at the end of the game. Little pass to Clint Brundage in the corner in the end zone, and the place just went crazy. I mean, we got a 15-yard penalty for unsportsmanlike conduct, mostly from the stands, because they thought the game was over, and there was about 30 seconds left with one of the best passers in the country on the Stanford side. And I think at the time he was the best kicker in the country. And so we gave up 15 yards and, you know, and all of a sudden he's in place to kick. I'm not going to call it a chip shot, but it was something he would probably make 7 out of 10 times. And he shanked it, and then we went on to win. But yeah, that was by far one of the greatest ones. You know, and Tony Hill was one of those guys. You know, he was at the Cowboys when I was there, and we had a good laugh about it, because the year before I told Tony Hill, I said, you know, you were the motivation for us whipping your butt that year, because the year before when we played you guys out in Palo Alto, you caught a 67-yard touchdown pass at the end of the game. And then as you're going in the end zone, you turn back and put the ball in the face of our defenders when we were already, you know, the game was out of reach. And we never forgot that, Tony. We never forgot that. You know, so anyway, that was, you're talking about some great ones. He was a pretty darn good player himself.
Yeah, I had never, that's one game that I missed, actually, just in doing research. I mean, I never really looked into that Stanford game. Really, I think the Eastern games kind of caught my eye because, you know, just naturally, like, I mean, I grew up in Massachusetts, love Northeast ball still to this day. But I mean, I didn't realize that Stanford game was just such a, you know, an instant classic, I guess, for lack of a better term. So, I mean, I learned something. I mean, that's amazing.
Yeah, no, it definitely sticks out.
So you mentioned Clenny Brundage, of course, one of the great pass catchers in Army football history. So what was your guys' connection like? How great was your guys' chemistry as a tandem?
Well, first of all, Clenny and I had a history because he played for Oviedo High School. I played for Apopka in Central Florida. He was 2 years, I guess, 2 years behind me. 2 years behind me in class, but I was really 3 years older than him because I went to prep school for a year. So he would have been a freshman sophomore when I was a senior. And I was pretty cocky in high school. And I was a pretty decent basketball player. And, and we would constantly beat his team, and I know he hated it. But automatically coming into West Point, there was a rivalry there. And, we would talk smack with each other. And of course, you know, Clenny was younger. So I'm like, you know, you're the new kid on the block. You know, you gotta stay in your place and, you know, do what we tell you to do and you'll be fine. And of course, Clenny, you know, being a great athlete and a great person himself, he probably didn't take too kindly to that. He was ready for his stardom, which he really was ready for. And I will tell you that Homer used to always call us Blenny and Bremen, you know, just to kind of mix us up, because we were frickin' frack as far as the the duo is concerned. But I had the greatest amount of respect for him as a particularly as an athlete, you know, and he was a very, very great basketball player as well at Army.
Yeah, absolutely. I think officially he's in the Army Athletic Hall of Fame under both sports, if I'm not mistaken, not just football.
Well, I think when you go into the Hall of Fame, you go in, it's the Army Sports Hall of Fame.
Okay. So
there's not a specific football or basketball. Everybody's inducted into the same Hall of Fame. So yeah, I mean, there are players, especially back in the old days, you know, you'd have a lot of multiple sport athletes. But I think that for those who excelled in one sport, you know, certainly playing a second sport helped, you know, helps in the overall aura of their capabilities. But Clenny was a bona fide great player in both.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, his stats are staggering. I mean, I'm more familiar with his football stats, but looking at his basketball, I mean, Army basketball hasn't had many great years, but man, he contributed a good amount to the program.
Yeah, for sure.
So going on to, I guess, more detail, talking to 1977, I guess we'll talk about the Navy game. Like, going to that 1977 Navy game, Army hadn't scored more than 6 points against Navy since 1972. They'd only scored one touchdown since in that same span. Which I think you scored with, I think it was on a quarterback sneak in 75, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, could be, but I don't remember any of that stuff. All I remember is the 77 game. The rest of them were, you know, blurs, because it was just so disappointing to, beat Air Force 3 out of 4 years, and Air Force beat Navy 3 out of 4 years, and Navy beating us 3 out of 4 years. It was just, you know, really aggravating on why we would have Air Force's ticket, but we couldn't beat Navy, and it really stuck in our craw for all those years, you know, leading up to that 77 game.
Yeah. So with that 77 game, like, can you take us like into, I guess, the emotions, like the feel of it? I mean, I think that's one of the coldest Army Navy games ever, if I recall correctly, and just everything that was with it. Like, it's also one of the most exciting ones too. I mean, with Navy having a goal to go situation, almost beating Army. Like, I guess, can you just like take us in, like, just immerse us into just what the 1977 Army Navy game was like?
Yeah, well, it was a tremendously cold day. And I think, I don't know what history would prove out, but I think it was the coldest Army-Navy game. It was so cold that my future wife stayed in the hotel room to watch the game. And it was so cold that I didn't even want to make the team go down in warmups and, you know, sit on the ground or lay on the ground before the game. Although, you know, we had to do it in order to stretch, but the ground was, you know, hard. It had rained a few days before. It was, you know, ice. We had a lot of players, you know, who wore high top shoes, and then we had the wooden goalposts. I mean, it was a throwback. It was a throwback to throwbacks. These were the days where, you know, the wooden goalposts were put up for purposes of tearing down, you know, whoever won the game. And then, of course, you know, when we were able to tear down our goalposts, or, you know, the cadets were, everybody got a piece of it. I mean, it was ripped to shreds, and everybody got a little piece of it. So it was tremendously exhilarating, is all I can say. It was like you know, kind of out of your skin exhilarating. But I will tell you that one important thing in that game, you know, just to kind of give you an idea of that it's so much more than just a game, is Joe Gattuso, who was a star running back for Navy, who, you know, I played with in the East-West Shrine game, and he was a real fine player. He came into our locker room after the game and congratulated several of us. And I'm like, wow, in 3 years, you know, I never did that. And I don't know that I would have done it that year. And I said, you know, that just takes a tremendous amount of character. But I guess, you know, if you'd beaten somebody for 3 years, you probably felt so sorry for them. Glad to go in and, you know, wish them the best. But that always stuck with me, you know, his graciousness and, you know, in that moment.
Yeah, so you mentioned Gattuso, and that reminds me of course, he had the halfback option pass that fell incomplete on fourth down. Can you take me through, I guess, your emotions and your nerves, like seeing Navy drive down on that final drive?
Well, it was, it was like you're just in your own nightmare, you know, knowing that they have the capability, and then when you actually see it happen, but you know, they got down, I think they were a little bit inside the 10, maybe 7 or 8 yard line, fourth and goal. And, you know, like I said earlier, there were, you know, you didn't go into overtime, so they had the chance to tie us. And they decided not to. They decided to go for the win, which I have to give them a lot of credit. And, you know, we were able to stop them. And, you know, the fact that, you know, Joe was right-handed, and they put him on a sweep to the left to throw to the left to this day just still kind of baffles me. But, you know, I think that's the way, you know, their coaches thought. They were just so let's pull something out here that is just not not conventional. And it thankfully it didn't work. We had them covered and we were somewhat expecting something like that.
Yeah, that's I mean, what a relief it was for him to, I guess, not make that pass and just for Army to beat Navy for the first time since 72. Really underrated game, an underrated game of the series, in my opinion, just with the amount of star power relative to the academies. Because, I mean, not just Gattuso. I know. I think Phil McConkey would have been in his senior year. So, yeah, McConkey's one of my favorite. I guess if I had favorite Navy players, McConkey would be one of them just because his story is just so great and inspiring. And I guess like in the footage I have seen, like as a deep threat, he's a fun watch. He really is a fun watch, in those old, Navy foot in that old Navy footage. But
well, he was recruited to West Point. And I wish I could validate this with Homer today, but what I had heard is we decided not to go after him really that hard because he had too small of hands.
Oh man. I wish I didn't hear that.
I didn't like hearing it either because I would have loved to have had him as one of my receivers.
It was truly amazing. I mean, I think like I mean I've said on the record that the guy that Navy has this year, Eli Heidenreich, that he is the most talented guy that they've had playing the receiver position since Phil McConkey. It's been a while since they've had a guy like McConkey, and Heidenreich this year is definitely making a run for. Are giving him a run for his money, but I just did not know that he was also recruited by us. So that's very disappointing. I'd like him even more if he played for us.
For sure.
So going on to my next question, this one might I guess might be kind of a bitter one. So like, how did not having an opportunity to play in a bowl after 1977 feel? I know the Independence Bowl had given Army a look, but I know that the Department of the Army had intervened before, notably in 1967, in preventing Army from going to the Sugar Bowl when the Sugar Bowl invited Army that year. So how did that feel, just having a great year, 7-4, and just like not being able to, you know, be the first West Point team to play in a bowl game?
Yeah, well, you know, and it's hard to put it's hard to understand the feeling in 1977, you know, based on today, you know, and probably based on, you know, what you've been used to. I mean, this day and age, half the teams go to a bowl game, right? I mean, there's a bowl in almost every city. So back then, bowls were extremely coveted, okay? And the Independence Bowl was probably the lowest tier of the bowls. And rightly or wrongly, I think there were people in our administration, particularly the current athletic director or the athletic director at the time, who didn't feel the Independence Bowl was worthy of West Point. And I cannot, you know, I don't have real firsthand knowledge, but my understanding is that we could have been invited to the Independence Bowl, that between the administration and Department Army, they put a kibosh on it because it wasn't quite up to, you know, Army and West Point standards. And I think there are a number of us who kind of got that information later down the line that made us a little bitter, you know, not having that chance to show our wares. But you know, that's something you could really research into. But I do think that there was even more of an opportunity than how you laid it out for us to have gone to that bowl.
Yeah, I've only seen a newspaper clipping, and of course, I can dive in more. I've only seen the clipping where it says that the Independence Bowl, it was between Army and Colgate, where Colgate had a really nice year that year. I want to say that they were either 10-1 or even 11-0.
Yeah, well, guess who beat them?
You guys did. Our Army did. So I know it was between you guys, and Colgate didn't even get the invitation. I don't even know who played in the 77 game, but it wasn't even Colgate. So I didn't know that the administration felt it was beneath them. And I guess it's a good thing that it was the Independence Bowl that they shot down, because the last time that the Department of Army intervened with the bowl game to that point, the Sugar Bowl, the mess hall didn't have any sugar. So, I mean, you can't there's not a food commodity with the Independence Bowl that you can take from the mess hall. So I guess that's a good benefit there. So I guess going on further into your 1977 / I guess early 1978. So you mentioned the All-Star games beforehand with the East-West Shrine game, the Hula Bowl. What were those experiences like? Because I think a lot of people watching this, probably like, I guess, younger fans of Army football and college football in general, when they see the All-Star games, like in this day and age, like it's kind of like a formality, because you can watch any game at any level, any division on TV, like any player in the country you want to see, like there's means and access to it. But for me, like as a huge fan of history, like I love All-Star games. I just love the opportunity for the best players in college football to be in one place, like at one time, you know, and just get putting on a show, I guess, for lack of a better term, for college football fans. So like, what were your experiences at those All-Star games like?
Well, you know, once again, it's hard to compare today to back then, but you know, like you said, if you were a star player, or if you are a star player today, you're overexposed. You know, there's you know, the internet and Twitter and Instagram and you name it, NIL, you know, blah 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 blah. Back in the day, we were sequestered. You know, the only time I ever got to see or talk to a fan was right after the game, and you know, signing a few autographs. You know, and you think about the real old days, you know, like in the 40s when people used to get around and just listen on the radio, you know, I mean, to me, that was hard to understand in the day and age that I played in, where you actually had TV that people could get around. But there's that big of a difference today as there was between when I played and you know, the 40s when people used to get around the radio, as far as exposure, as far as opportunities for exposure. And in some ways, you know, that, I mean, it was like the old radio days that made, you know, really great athletes even greater, right? There was a mystique about it. There is no mystique today.
Yeah.
At least, you know, in my view, because like you say, you know, it's all out there and everybody gets to go to a bowl game practically. So, you know, that's kind of giving you a backdrop to how I felt about the honor of going to a postseason bowl game. And it was a humongous honor to me. It was a personal goal that, you know, I certainly didn't make note of to anybody, but it was something that, you know, I really wanted to do. And I think that in that day and age when there was no exposure and you know, you were sequestered so much and you didn't get the experience of being a college athlete, really, you know, it was different being an Army athlete than a Penn State athlete and what they got to experience. And so it was pretty cool that for a week I got to experience that, you know, with other players and, you know, from different teams, many of whom I had played against, and being like one of them, you know, just a college football player versus an Army football player, you know. So it was a neat experience. And in the East-West Shrine game, I was elected co-captain along with Larry Bethea. And Larry, who, you know, was another who passed away several years after after his playing days at the Cowboys. So those were huge honors. It was just, and that's what they're meant to be. They're meant to be, you know, honorable things. And Gattuso was at the East-West Shrine game, and that was kind of neat, you know, getting to hang out with him a little bit.
Yeah, that's just great to hear. I mean, and I hear stories like that, and I'm like, man, like this is just the great side of college football, you know. And I mean, NIL, all that stuff today, like they're not inherently bad things, but they take away from just the experiences and like the way that we treasure things like all-star games, where like all the great players are there at once and the friendships and the bonds built. I mean, I'm a huge fan. I'll always be a huge fan of all-star games.
Friends, there's a reason you don't need another workout. You need a coach who's an expert in fitness and proven protocols, but more importantly, someone who has survived total physical and mental collapse himself, and then pulled himself out of the fire and rebuilt himself even stronger and better. Greg Iannacelli is a West Point graduate from the class of 1997, U.S. Army veteran, successful enterprise software sales executive, IFBB pro bodybuilder, NCI certified fitness coach, and now the founders of Warriors Physique Fitness. After losing everything, his marriage, his identity, his confidence, and his physical and mental health, Greg completely rebuilt himself from rock bottom through faith, discipline, and elite level training. At age 50, he recently became the overall classic physique bodybuilding champion at the NPC Masters US Nationals in Las Vegas, earning his pro card, proving it's never too late to become the warrior you were meant to be. Yes, that's right, friends. This man is the national champion. Today, Greg's mission is to coach men and women who are struggling to stop drifting in decline and resurrect themselves mentally, physically, and spiritually with his online coaching program. If you are ready to reclaim your strength, your confidence, and your warrior ethos identity, apply now at warriorsphysiquefitness.com and start writing your own comeback story. As a special note, Greg is offering all military veterans and first responders a 15% discount off his 16-week transformation program. AFF Firsty Club members and or West Point grads get a massive 30% discount on that same initial 16-week fee. Like all of our sponsors, Greg has a business card up on our website. Click it and you'll be talking to him in a day or two to get yourself back into your prime. It's too easy, guys. Just too easy.
I was going to add one other thing, and the big differences between today and back then is, you know, I also went to the Hula Bowl, which was a whole lot of fun, and everybody who was on the Hula Bowl roster was also invited to the Japan Bowl over in Tokyo. I was the only player on both teams who didn't get to go to the Japan Bowl because the academy said, no, you got to come back and take finals.
Oh, man.
So I missed out on that opportunity. So that was, you know, that was a tough one. And then the Senior Bowl, I wasn't allowed to go compete in the Senior Bowl because they paid the players. You know, you got a stipend. And, you know, I wasn't allowed to accept that invitation.
Okay, wow. So that
times are different. You know, they're different.
That explains a lot, because I did notice that there was like hardly, I think the first Army player that was invited to the Senior Bowl was in 2017. I always just chalked it up to it being the highest echelon of college all-star games, but I didn't think about the whole pay thing. I mean, I just never occurred to me they actually paid players, and that was actually an obstacle. So that's interesting. I was going to ask about like just the experiences being like a cadet, just being away from the academy, participating in the practices, especially like with the Hula Bowl being in Hawaii. I guess how much of it was I guess play, and how much of it was, you know, trying to keep up with your studies so you wouldn't fall behind before graduation day?
You mean while I was at the game?
Yeah, while you were like practicing, like in the yeah. Like just in the destination itself, like did you get really far behind? Or
I stayed far behind, but I got farther behind because when during those 2 weeks, the East West game and the Hula Bowl, I was totally, totally immersed in that experience, and I wasn't going to let studies get in the way of that.
I mean, I wouldn't either, man, like, especially like, it kind of, I wouldn't say it hurts me, but it's kind of makes me sad that you weren't able to experience the Japan Bowl, because that's one that I look at in old media guides and old newspaper clippings like, man, like that's something cool I wish we had today, like the Japan Bowl. Like we have the Hula Bowl back nowadays, but it's in Orlando. I mean, it's definitely not the same. But man, it's just interesting.
The Hula Bowl is in Orlando?
Yes, it is. It was in Orlando for the past few years. Now it's back at it. It's in DeLand at Spec Martin now. it's a weird situation. I went 1 year just because of the Hula Bowl name, but it definitely wasn't the same.
It's not the same. Hawaii versus DeLand, I don't think there's any comparison. I know DeLand very well, so
definitely not. It's just a different time with these all-star games. But I guess going on to, I know you mentioned your time with the Cowboys trying out, so I guess like just in pursuing that pro dream, with the Cowboys, with the New Jersey Generals and the Arizona Wranglers, like, I guess, what were each of those experiences like for you?
Well, the Cowboys was a tremendously rewarding experience that I, even cherish to this day. Just what exposure I got there. The Generals and the Wranglers and the Winnipeg Blue Bombers for a couple of weeks, not so much. I mean, it was, the USFL was just really trying to figure itself out. And it was, maybe a little bit chaotic. So it was more of a job, going to work every day and, doing what you could do to stay on the team and be able to play. The Cowboys was truly an experience. I mean, it was a class organization. I was there with really class people, particularly, Coach Landry and all the people he had around him. Great players, many of them in the Hall of Fame now. I mean, Too Tall Jones is one comes to mind, and Dorsett and Randy White, and I could go on down the list of all the great players and the great coaches. I mean, the coaches that I had while I was there, all of them ended up being head coaches in the NFL themselves. So just a great experience. And the thing that I would say about that is, the edge between being the last guy who gets cut and the number one quarterback is razor thin, where in college, it's maybe an inch thin, and then in high school it's a foot. So the difference between being the guy who plays on Sunday and the guy who gets cut, a lot of times is being in the wrong place at the wrong time with the wrong people, and timing. All you got to do is think about Brady. If his the fellow, I can't remember his name right now, but if he hadn't got injured, there never would have, might have not have ever been a Brady. You never know. But here's a guy who, was a really, really good college player. Nobody knows much about his college career, but got a chance, right time, right place, right people, and made a huge mark. So, I didn't have a whole lot of things going for me, being a 25-year-old rookie, having been out of really strong competitive football for 5 years. And that was one reason why I, played with with the Doughboys, to try to keep as much edge on as I could. But the experience, I wouldn't give it for anything. I spent my leave time doing two-a-days and three-a-days with the Cowboys. People thought I was crazy doing that, but like I say, it was a passion of mine at the time, and I had to follow that dream, wherever it would lead. And it didn't work out, and that's okay. I went on to bigger and better things.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, just the experience itself and just like pursuing the dream, it's truly amazing. I mean, and I can relate to it in kind of a way, just like been taking like weekend passes to cover games, just to be in the press box and, sure, those connections, I mean, of course, like it's nothing compared to being an NFL quarterback, but it's a passion, that's something that it's not crazy to spend, I guess, vacation time, off time and pursuing it. So
yeah,
it's just great to hear, honestly, just the experience that you had. I'm surprised too, I guess, about the way that you perceive the USFL as like more of a job. Because I mean, I've looked at the history of the USFL. I mean, when it came back in 2022, like, I was thrilled to see it come back and really got into the history of the league. And it seemed like a very exciting operation. But that's just interesting to hear you say it was like more like a job, and you know, just kind of the growing pains that was associated with the startup league.
Just nothing like the NFL. It's like the difference between, you know, presidential ball and a high school dance.
That's a funny comparison. That's hilarious. So I guess the final question I have before we wrap things up, Lehman, is just with Army football today, the state of Army football. I'm sure you've seen the ups and downs, you know, since you graduated, of the way that the program is. Now the program's on a consistent basis, not throwing the ball much, but winning consistently, where years like 2022 and 2023, where we went 6-6 in back-to-back years, was considered a disappointment to a lot of the fan base. Excuse me. So I guess, what's your current thoughts on the state of the Army program, whether it be anything from the scheme, like you wish we threw the ball more, or just like the way that we're perceived nationally? It's like, what are your thoughts on just Army football nowadays in general?
Well, I just want to say that, you know, Jeff Monken is the right guy for the job. I love his intensity. I love his never give up attitude, because like I said, with the Army football team in 77, all that stuff permeates down, and the team takes on a lot of the personality of the coach and the AD and the whole administration. You know, another thing that I would say about Army football is that there have been times when from the superintendent on down to the head football coach have not been in sync. And, you know, where goals were not aligned. And, you know, and people can make arguments about that. And you know, and I'd certainly discuss any of those arguments, but Army needs to have a winning football team. It needs to, because West Point and the U.S. Army were winners, and we need to have that. So if there's ever an administration that's not aligned to those goals, then we either need to do away with it and not put a team out there, period, or we need to go after it and be as good as we can be. And I think we have been. I think, you know, last year proves it. And seeing the thing with Army football, I find it almost impossible to have year in and year out seasons like we had last year. I mean, those are the kind of seasons that we cherish. But you know, I think the expectations are that, well, we don't want to go from, I forget, what was our record last year, 10-1?
Or 12-1?
12-2. We don't want to go from 12-2 to 2-12, you know. That would be, you know, unbearable. And I think that we're in that direction now where, you know, where we're going to have some building years. And we're not going to be 12-2 every year. We're not going to win the AAC every year. You know, we may not go to a bowl game every year. Navy has learned that recently. But, you know, to be competitive and to have a winning record, and that's important, to be winners. I salute our, you know, our school, our administration, our team, for being aligned to that.
Yeah, I think that's very well said, honestly. It feels like every single high-ranking leader that I've heard speak, just whether it be at the academy during an engagement or whether it be on YouTube or something, like the two words just reverberate: winning matters. And I think you just put it perfectly how, I mean, a lot of people's first exposure to the U.S. Army, to West Point. I mean, I never really thought much of my parents' service as a 5-6 year old kid until you know, watching Army football. Like that's really the first thing that a lot of people see when they see the Army, is the Army football team, ironically. So, I mean, winning matters in that case too. Like, I guess, not to exaggerate, but like you said, like just for the, you know, the security of the American people, right? That we have this winning spirit, this winning attitude. So, yeah, I think that's very well put. And I mean, I just love the place that Army football has been in compared to when I was a kid. If you would have told me that this, that we'd be doing this as a kid, you know, just winning a conference, winning 12 games, going to bowls consistently, I would have said, man, sign me up, because this sucks right now.
Yeah.
As a, you know, when I was growing up. So I really agree with what you say there. But that concludes all the questions I have, Lehman. Thank you so much for taking the time. Do you have anything final to add before we sign off in this interview and wrap a bow on it?
Yeah, I do have one thing final. You know, I'm almost embarrassed if this is going to be in video. You know, I'm wearing my Marist football shirt today. So just to let everybody know, my son coaches at Marist High School, which is a perennial powerhouse here in Georgia. And tonight is their first playoff game. So I've been in game day uniform all day. So if I'd have been smarter, maybe I'd have worn my Army football sweatshirt, but I'm
at least one of us
today.
I'll be rooting from afar. At least one of us is in Army regalia right now. But thank you again, Lehman. Really appreciate this conversation. Really learned a lot. This is honestly like something that, you know, I guess looking back, 12-year-old me would have enjoyed seeing me do, you know, just going in time and seeing me do. So thank you so much for the insight, for just the reflection, and just the lessons on the history of Army football, just like this oral history. As a historian, you know, oral history is just as important as written history. So this is something that I truly treasure, and just thank you so much.
Well, and I thank you for giving me the opportunity, because I think it's important too. You know, we had some great times. We had a great team, and we had some really great players who have gone on to great things. And, you know, if I can be the spokesperson for that, to honor them and to honor what they did in 1977, then I'm very humbled to do that. And I take every opportunity I can, you know, to lift them up, because any success that I had, I like to believe it was their success, and vice versa.
Absolutely. Football is the ultimate team sport. I mean, it truly is. And I'm just glad that you can come on and just share the stories of the 77 team. Maybe one day Astro Football will get a couple more guys from that team just as part of offseason interviews, or just other great Army teams in the past. But yeah, just thank you. Thank you again. You know, just really enjoyed this. And I'm sure I hope the people that do watch or listen to this will just learn a lot, and just that fascination with that great 77 team, just that era of Army football just comes to life.
Yeah. Well, give Chuck D'Amico a call sometime. You'll get a different perspective from the defensive side of the ball.
Okay. Yeah, I'll write that down, and I'll try to see if we can get connected. I'll definitely text you about that. About that, Lehman. So yeah, that sounds like a plan. But thank you again, Lehman, for joining. Really appreciate it. Really grateful to do this. Also grateful for Army paternity leave too. I know we talked beforehand that they didn't have that when you were around, just to be able to take an hour off and just do that, you know, while the baby's sleeping. So so thank you again.
Okay. Well, thank you. Have a great day.
Thank you, you too.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to this week's Ask for Football Army Football Show. We hope you enjoyed our deep dive into Army football. Remember, whether you're cheering in the stands or following along from home, get all your updates on the Army football team at askforfootball.com. And as a special thanks, we would like to thank our sponsor, Jocelyn Bradley Real Estate. If you're looking to buy or sell a home, Jocelyn Bradley is the expert you need. Visit jocelynbradley.com for all your real estate needs. Don't forget, subscribe, leave us a review, and follow us on social media for all the latest updates. Until next time, go Army, beat Navy!